Balance your trading strategy by adding futures. CME Group helps you manage risk and capture opportunities in all market environments. Capitalize on around-the-clock access to highly liquid global futures and options market across all major asset classes. Just visit your online broker and get started. Plug into valuable educational materials and trading tools and see what adding futures can do for you at cmegroup.com/onthetape. Last night at Madison Square Garden, both risk and opportunity met on the ice
really?
In the form of the Florida Panthers against the New York Rangers. Panthers emerged victorious 4-2, empty net goal late. The third goal, it didn't seem like Igor saw it, Dan, as you know, but it doesn't matter. You got to make that save if you're looking to go to the next level. The Panthers, I still think, and I've said this, best team in the NHL. Good measuring stick ahead of the trade deadline on Friday. Of course, the Rangers played this Saturday. Market call, 1 o'clock on the East Coast. Guy Adami, Dan Nathan, just the two of us today on this CME day. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Guy. I mean, thanks for that little NHL update. We know that you're really geeked up about the Rangers into the trade deadline on Friday afternoon. Again, you know, we just did our fast money call. And it was interesting because you said it first. And just a little behind the scenes here, every day at 12:30, we do it with our producers, the hosts, the fellow panelists. We kind of kick around some ideas. The producers have a little bit of a, what do they call it? A little bit of a preliminary rundown.
Sure.
And you went through a bunch of things. We'll probably talk about a couple of them here on market call. But you said it's a market day.
Yes.
And then Tim Seymour reiterated that when we got to his turn to talk about it. He said, yeah, it's a market day. Let's see how they close. What does that mean to you, Guy? What does that mean? It means that like the macro is kind of overtaken any single names and stuff
so
like that?
So you figure out of a 365 days, obviously, you know, we have 104 or so on weekends. And then you add some holidays in. So you probably have, I don't know, about 215 or so trading days-ish type of thing. So out of that, maybe you get 20 or 25 days that are market days. In other words, it's the market that's the story, not individual names. And that happens both to the upside and the downside. Today, we're seemingly getting it to the downside. But it, in so much as you're seeing, you know, this move, obviously in the S&P, but more importantly, in sort of these high valuation, high risk, risk on trades that are, I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but some of them have reversed today, specifically when you look at Bitcoin, which made a new all-time high, I believe, and obviously you've seen the reversal. So when you're starting to see things like that, given the euphoria, and I watched Squawk Box this morning, had Anthony Pompliano on.
He was wearing a suit. So he got rid of his t-shirts and his hoodies in that last crypto binge. And now he wears a suit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he's moving,
you know, that was
like,
the exact
moving on up.
I saw the headline that he said it's going much, much higher, much,
well,
much
his point was, and again, I don't understand this stuff, but into the halvenings, the last however many times it's happened, you know, the stock has doubled. You know, he made what seemed to be pretty cogent points, but, you know, Kernan, to his credit, pushed back and said, you know, oh my God, you know, we've heard this before type of thing. And again, listen. There's a very good chance, I have no idea, but I mean, there's a very good chance at the end of the year or this time next year, we're talking about Bitcoin with six digits attached to it. So in other words, over 100,000. I mean, I have no idea. That's exactly right. Because the volatility in this thing is back in a meaningful way. But this is not a Bitcoin. I just got on a tangent because I found that to be an interesting move today. And it sort of mirrored some of these other things. But today is clearly the market day. You see that in the form of the VIX. I would be encouraged by the Russell's performance, obviously down on the day, but obviously not nearly to the extent that we're seeing the S&P and the NASDAQ. So look, there's some things to be encouraged by. There's some things to be concerned about. I'm obviously more in the concerned camp.
Yeah, and I guess the point I was just making, the reason why I talked about market day is like, does it turn into a few market days? Does that turn into a trend? Just the same way that the market was grinding higher, mm-hmm. you know, over the last kind of few months or so, you know, that seemed like a kind of very low vol thing. And we talked about it a little yesterday. I know you love these sorts of market idioms, you know, escalator up, elevator down sort of thing, but that's usually how it goes the opposite way. But in individual names, you know, they've kind of crashed up, you know, like, and we know the names in the semi space or whatever, a lot of that stuff we talked about yesterday, it just really is unsustainable. There is something called gravity out there, people, you know what I mean? And it works in the stock market too. Guys, should we take a look at what we're going to run through here over the next?
And they did such a good job. And the third bullet point has a little emoji, I think. Is that what they call those things? I don't know.
Yeah, it's emoji.
It's a little rocket ship. Yeah. So market rally broadening, there's a question mark there. So we'll discuss. The most important trend line in technology, you're going to like this, folks, because there are a few trend lines that are in play. And obviously, Bitcoin hits an all-time high. We discussed that briefly. Yes, it did. The reversal is interesting. We'll see how that plays out the rest of the day. But you know, let's take a look at things in terms of the charts that we like to look at first. And obviously, on a CME day, we'll look at through the lens of E-mini futures. Here's the trend line, Dan, and this is the trend line that you've drawn for quite some time. Lower left to upper right since effectively Halloween. And here we are once again seemingly testing that uptrend line. We'll see what happens. You can see where the moving average is. We pointed that out a number of times. The market tends to be mean reversion at certain points of the year in terms of the gravitational pull towards the moving average. With each passing day, that moving average gets higher. With each passing day, that uptrend gets higher. So if the market theoretically would just stay here for the next week, you will effectively have broken an uptrend line. So thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what we're focused on here, right? Is like kind of the ability just to keep notching higher, hold that technical level. I mean, believe it or not, you know, a lot of folks ask us all the time, why do you guys spend so much time on charts? Well, we certainly do on Market Call because this is a very visual medium, if you will. But you just look at the pace in which, you know, like the index has just moved up. There hasn't been a lot of volatility. I mean, when you look at that move over the last, call it 2 months or so, how many kind of like 2% swings, let's just say, you know what I mean? Which are not the norm by any means. They're the norm on the downside, right? When you start going the opposite way, but just been this slow grind higher and they've held that kind of very steep uptrend. And you look just how far below, you know, that 200-day moving average is. Our friend Peter Brookvar over at Bleakley Advisors, I think he kind of spotlighted this a little bit ago on the book report. You know, the last couple instances that we had the S&P futures, you know, that far 10% or above, you know, its 200-day moving average, it usually corrects in a meaningful fashion over the next, you know, period or so once it kind of breaks that uptrend. So I think that's important to note. And then if we just want to pull up the NASDAQ futures really quickly, the NASDAQ 100, we know again that, you know, NVIDIA has been making more and more of a weight within this index here. You see that that moving average guy, it looks a little bit steeper going up, you know, with that uptrend that's been in place. But just say this, you know, we spent some time yesterday talking about this. We spent a lot of time over the last few weeks, just, you know, Apple's underperformance, Tesla's underperformance, and then the underperformance of Google. You know, all of these stocks are down 13, 14% from the recent highs. That was the Mag 7. Now it's the Fab 4. You know, what's next? And I just want to highlight the Microsoft here for a second, because obviously it's got a greater market cap than that of Apple. You know, a large part of Microsoft's gains over the last, call it, 14 or 15 months has to do with their generative AI strategy, the investment in OpenAI, how they're integrating those products and services within their own productivity suites, their own Copilot product, and the light. So let's just pull up that. You see that right there. You know, that uptrend guy to me might be one of the most important lines in the entire stock market right here. Because if it breaks that, you know, it's heading back towards that 370 level, which was that kind of breakout level. And again, maybe that's, you know, 5, 6, 7% or so. That 200-day moving average is going to be there. That might be, by the time it gets there, that might be really good support. But again, taking some of the froth out of this market, out of some of the market leaders, makes a lot of sense to me, guy.
100%. And again, Microsoft, we've talked about it a number of times on Fast Money over the years. We've mentioned how important the company Microsoft is. You know, I've said it's either one of the top three or top five most important companies in the world. Obviously, by market cap, a bit more important than that. With that said, I mean, it's also gotten itself pretty expensive vis-a-vis where it's been historically in terms of valuation. And again, we're quick to point out valuation is not the only reason you should trade stocks, but you have to be aware. So, you know, Microsoft pushing up against 30 times next year's numbers is historically very expensive for the name. And obviously, it's trading at a couple turns more expensive than the broader market. And it's not negative against Microsoft. I mean, it's not the company's fault that the market has bid it up here. You say things like that all the time. Yeah. But it's gotten itself into a level where, you know, a lot of good can, you know, the thing about the magnitude of the beats in order for this to continue, we've said this about NVIDIA as well. So it's just a matter of time before something comes in line or the market hears something they don't want to hear. And this uptrend line that's been in place gets broken. And then you're looking at the moving average. But as you've also pointed out, and we talk about all the time, that's what you want. I mean, you want some of the froth to be taken out. You want some of this exuberance to be taken out of the market and to get things to levels that actually make a little bit of sense. But if Microsoft were to break this trend line, stands to reason that the S&P and obviously the NASDAQ futures are going to either lead or follow. My sense is follow more than lead.
Yeah, and I'll just say this about Microsoft. And again, you know, valuation, not a good timing tool. And again, if this technology, you know, generative AI is going to transform Microsoft's business and that of many of their customers, they're going to have increased demand for, you know, their subscription products, their cloud products. I get it. Okay, fine. Just, you know, it can trade 35 times. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really care. I'm not here to kind of differentiate that. But like, at some point, if you're looking at it on fiscal 2024 earnings, that's the current year that they're in, they're halfway through it. So it's trading about 35 times, right, which is a very high multiple. It's expected to gain, you know, 20% in earnings this year with about 15 or 16% revenue growth, right? Okay, so that's fine. So if you look at the margins, the gross margin expected to be up a little bit this fiscal year, 69% versus, like, say, 68.5% last year, expected to be flattish. Let's just look at the out year, because pretty soon, as we get to the end of this quarter, people are going to start focusing on fiscal 2025, because there's only going to be one quarter left in this current fiscal year. Expected EPS growth about 15% and about 14% on the sales side with flat margins. Supposed to trade 30 times next year. That's fine. As long as those numbers, you know, can stay there or start to work higher a little bit, right, guy? That's how you could justify it, paying into a potential downturn, unless you think that we're just going to go off to the races. You know, a lot of folks are talking about this. We had Dan Niles of Satori Fund, who was on Market Call with us, I think, a week or two ago. And I love Dan. And I love his analysis. He was on Fast Money last night, guy. But I want to get this one point. A lot of people are saying, and, you know, well, you know, Greenspan didn't say the term irrational exuberance until 1996, and the S&P went up 30% a year for the next 2 years, or next 4 years, okay, until it topped out. But here's the thing. If everybody agrees that all of this technology and the way markets work and everything like that has been so accelerated, you know, in the last 30 years, which it clearly has, then comparisons to the late 90s and what happened in that bubble is just, they're just different. It doesn't matter, because look at the way that we've just seen this market share gain or market cap gains pulled forward by a Microsoft or pulled forward by NVIDIA. That could mean that this could be like literally March 2000. You know what I mean? It could have all been concentrated in a year and a half, what took 5 years back then. Does that make sense to you, guy?
Well, there's not a lot that's made sense to me over the last year or so. So the short answer is, well, I mean, your explanation as to how this thing comes unglued makes a lot of sense without question. I mean, it's just, you know, we've actually brought up the whole, Sun Microsystems analogy. And we've talked about how the math just didn't work. And it wasn't pundits that were talking about how the math didn't work. The founder of the company actually outlined it for people to say, hey, in order for us to continue this trajectory, these are the number of things that need to happen. And almost by definition, it was impossible. But I do think, you know, there are a lot of people out there that feel this is a new paradigm, like it's different this time. And as we're quick to point out, I mean, how many times have you heard that about so many different things over the years? And look, you can say the total addressable market for AI is larger than anything we've ever seen before. And that's probably true, but the stocks are also being rewarded for exactly that in ways that we've never seen before as well. And just throw up a chart, for example, innocent. I'm Super Micro Computer. I'm sure it's a lovely company, but SMCI, just look at this move over the last 6 or so months, just to put things in context. I mean, this is not some, you know, $150 million company. I mean, this is now a significant company. Look at that move. If you go shorter term, just to show what we've seen, you know, over the last, you know, few months. I mean, this is what we call in the business a line job. Just do a little bit longer than that and you'll see. I mean, that's not normal. You know, again, you can say the market's just figured out their valuation, but, you know, moves of this magnitude are not normal. And then on top of which, the moves both up and down are not normal as well. Just look at those moves we've seen over the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 trading sessions or so. So something's amiss out there. And this harkens back to what Einhorn said a month or so ago about how the market, he used the term, not me, but how the market is effectively broken.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and I guess my main point, Guy, was that, you know, the comparisons to the late 90s and the inflation of that bubble, you know, it took 5-6 years to inflate. I think Dan mentioned, you know, when Netscape went public in 94 and we didn't top out until, you know, like early 2000, and no one thought that was a top. The bear market lasted, you know, until spring of 2003. So really from March of 2000 to March of 2003, that was absolutely excruciating. My point now is that look at what happened during the financial crisis. The stock market was down only 1 year, 2008. Look at what happened during COVID. We didn't even have a down year. I mean, 2020, think about that. The stock market did not close down. It corrected 35% from its highs in February to lows in March, the quickest decline we've ever had, but then closed up and then obviously raised in 2021. So my only point is that if this is irrational exuberance, okay, and it's spread, you know what I mean? Like, and we read that quote yesterday. This was from Bloomberg Intelligence, I think on the On the Tape podcast. The Mag 7 were up 60% in Q4 earnings year over year. The 493, the rest of the S&P 500, were down in earnings 1.5%. So it wasn't a broad rally. You might be happy that the stock market is broadening out right now. That doesn't speak to, in my opinion, what the earnings outlook looks like for the rest of those companies. And you better hope you don't see Tesla's earnings are expected to be down again this year. You better hope that we don't see some of these up 10% expectations for a lot of companies, S&P 500, shoot to the negative side like we saw in Tesla. So that's the only reason why, Guy, I'm bringing that all up. But I think it all has the potential to kind of really move in a much quicker fashion than they have in these past down cycles.
Well, you know, I think that's also the right point, that things happen much faster today than they happened, you know, 15, 20, 25 years ago, without question. Yeah. So what took 18 months, 20 years ago, I think will take, you know, a few months now. Things have been sped up. SMH is a fascinating chart. Might as well throw that up because obviously this is a huge ETF that everybody's watching. I think 30% of this is now comprised, 22% or so of NVIDIA, another 9% of Taiwan Semi. So there's 31%, and then everything else sort of rounds out. I want to say that AMD is probably 6, Broadcom, and you can do the rest. But here we are in terms of the chart, and you can see what we showed you there and where the moving average is. But keep an eye on that moving average. Now, if Amanda and or Jacob can do a longer-term chart and see the prior double tops that we broke through and where those double tops are. And there's a, and this is again my opinion, but if things sort of play out the way I think they're going to play out, those prior double tops at about 162, 163 are going to be retested. So prior resistance becomes support. You can see a very well-defined double top. You see what happened when we traded up to it last summer. We actually did sell off. And then like everything else in the fall, we were off to the races as we held the moving average. But that prior resistance to the upside, again, 163 will line up exactly with the 200-day moving average. And that should be exactly where the support is. And when something is trading 220 or so, you know, you do $60 off that, you can start figuring the percentage move that I think we're going to see at some point in the not too distant future to the downside.
Yeah, so hopefully they can leave this up here for a second. Okay, so I think this is a great point. Okay, so 160 to where it is right now, you can do like, you know, that was a 40% move that we had from that breakout level in early December. Okay, and just so you know, guys, so the SMH right now, as I'm looking at it on my FactSet machine, NVIDIA makes up 26%. Okay,
okay, so I'm off by a little bit. Yeah,
Taiwan Semi is 9.5%. AMD is 6%, Broadcom is 6%, ASML is 5%. We know what's happened to ASML. And then Applied Material, 5%. So I just want to say, all right, so when you have an ETF like this and you have a stock that has performed the way that NVIDIA has and has become 26%. That's how you get that sort of outperformance. Now, I want them to put the NDX in up here. You can put NDX futures up there too, okay? So just going to the NDX, which is the NASDAQ 100, and I want to do the same chart, 5 years. Just kind of look at this, okay? So that, you see that breakout, it's far less dramatic, right? So like if we just want to do it on a percentage basis, I mean, it's less than 10%. So it's single digits percentage, same time period, right? So you have that massive outperformance in the SMH because of obviously NVIDIA and a couple of those other names. And so when I look at the NASDAQ 100, I look at Microsoft that's just below 9%. I see Apple that is 8%. And I see NVIDIA that is only 6%, right? So you can figure out what we're kind of getting at here. You can get that sort of outperformance in an SMH, which is much harder to get in the NDX futures or the NASDAQ 100, whatever, which way you're playing it, whether it's the QQQ, the ETF that tracks it. So to me, I just think the SMH looks like primed for a pullback guy towards that breakout level, if that makes some sense on any disappointment of some of those big names.
100%. And listen, if I'm being honest with which I try to be, I mean, I've been thinking this for quite some time. So once it broke through those prior highs, and you know, it was probably around the same time, if I'm not mistaken, it was probably at the end of December, around the same time that Thursday or Friday that you went on Fast Money and you thought that NVIDIA could sort of blow up through the upside. So, you know, that's sort of your gauge in terms of where things sort of rocketed from and where things should sort of, as you know, if you talk about gravity, gravitate back down towards, and it makes a lot of sense. The other thing that makes a lot of sense is Apple. And I, you know, as shitty as I've done on a lot of things, this is one that I think we've actually done a decent job. And we've pointed this out a number of times, but you know, here we are. And you know, the first time down, we traded the moving average, we bounced, we did it again a couple times. We've been through this. Well, when we sort of were vacillating around the moving average for a period of time, sort of in the low 180s, I think it started to become clear that there was something amiss and, you know, it was sort of hanging on by a thread. Well, that thread is now broken and you're starting to see the news stories on the back of it. And again, you know, people will come on and explain the bull case for Apple. I understand what the bull case is. Trust me when I tell you. I also understand, and we've pointed out for a number of months now, if not longer, that Apple has gotten itself pretty expensive vis-a-vis their earnings growth and their revenue growth. So yeah, you're looking for an opportunity to buy it. I think the first level, Dan, to me at least, that makes sense is probably the October low, which if memory serves was around 163 or so. And I think we're currently trading around 170. So I guess what I'm saying is most people here are not looking for an opportunity to short Apple, nor should they be. They're saying, where do I get in this thing if I haven't been it yet, or if I want to add to a position? And I think it comes in the form of that low we saw in October. If Amanda wants to put the cursor there, if we want to put up a real-time chart, you can see. But yep, Trust me when I tell you, it's about 163.
It's just a tad higher. It's it, like from my chart, it looks like the intraday low guy was 165.47 or 165.67 or something like that. Which again, you know, it's a rounding error if you think about it, right? Like that's the level and it might overshoot that. And Carter says that to us all the time that, you know, these numbers are not that precise, but it's like market has memory and people are focused on the levels where they got in, where they sold and the like here. You know, this is an interesting one to me because, you know, this is a China story. We've been talking about China for a long time. We've been talking about just the market share that companies like Xiaomi and the like have kind of taken domestically. We've been talking about some of just the nationalistic tendencies by their consumers and some of the potential bans. And as we see things get dialed up as it relates to, let's pull this out 5 years, if they will, for a second. You know, like there's a whole host of reasons why iPhones are just way too expensive for Chinese consumers, especially when you consider about what's going on, you know, there. Carter had some great long-term charts, if you want to go over to Worth Charting, and there were log charts, and he was looking at these things. I mean, this stock right here is breaking a long-term uptrend, and you won't see it right here, but like go look at Carter's Worth. But we have him back on tomorrow. Maybe we'll take another, or a Thursday guy, we'll take another look at this. But this brings us basically, you know, like to a level where you have to say to yourself, if the fundamentals are weakening, if the valuation seems expensive, if there's a whole host of macro factors at play here, reshoring is going to be expensive and the like, you know, this is not a great name right now. And there's no generative AI, nothing, right? And so, you know, the more tech people I talk to is like, well, they're going to relaunch Siri. Well, like, listen, if they launch their generative AI product and it's called Siri, that's a joke, because for 15 years, Siri has been a laughing stock. You know what I mean? Like, so they need to do something new and fresh. And maybe it has something to do with the fact of the guy that we had on Fast Money last night, the CEO, co-founder of Perplexity. You know, that product, that answer engine, as they're calling it, that could be a solve in the near term for Apple, in my opinion, guy.
Gene Munster is going to be on Fast Money tonight. That's a little tease. He'll point out the bull case. But if you could put that longer-term chart up, just, yeah, you know, again, I understand that each period of time is different and different things happen. But go a little shorter term if you can and give me like a five-year chart that you had originally up there. And so if you look at the period of time from sort of, I don't know, I want to say October 2021-ish, maybe late 2021, and look at that action. I mean, this is a stock that was going sideways to lower. And it really didn't culminate until early 2023. Now, look at the action we're seeing now. Again, this probably started, Dan, you know, you can attest, last summer when it topped out, traded down, traded back up. Mm-hmm. It's a very similar price action you saw over that period of time, again, from late 2021 into late 2022 into 2023. So, you know, Apple has traded sideways to lower for periods of time before. And the environment that we find ourselves in, I don't think it's ridiculous to think it can't happen again. So just be aware that for all those people out there that own it, don't trade it crowd, which I understand. Yep. I mean, this is a stock that historically has gone down as well.
Yeah, I want to make one last point here while we have this five-year chart. So again, if you just were to draw a line from the COVID low, attach it to the 2022 low, you get basically up to $160. So that $165 point that you were talking about, guy, ish from the October lows, you know, it has the 100% the potential to kind of overshoot that, right? So, you know, maybe it comes in the form of 159 or something like that. But the point is, you're never going to nail the bottom. And the last point I want to make is that from the highs in July of 2023 to the lows in late October that we're talking about, Apple sold off about 16%. The NASDAQ was down about 11%. The S&P was down about 10%. One of the reasons it sold off were all the same reasons it's selling off right now. Fears about China weakness, fears about the lack of Gen AI product launch. You know what I mean? The fears of just kind of, you know, expensive for like the growth rate and everything like that. So, you know, again, it's doing that. Sometimes stocks do trade on fundamentals. Another name that is clearly trading on fundamentals now, guy, okay, and has a lot of the same issues that, in my opinion, that Apple has, is Tesla. We're not going to spend too much time on it, but we just put this slide together because one of the reasons why the stock is going down was data about China sales. That was yesterday, but it followed through today. And I think it's interesting. There's this guy, and I mentioned Troy Tesla. Like, I subscribe to his Substack. He tracks, you know, deliveries, okay, and he has lots of interesting ways in which to do it, VIN data and the like here. So he's highlighting this. Now, here's another guy. This is Gary Black. He's like one of the biggest bulls on Tesla, but he's also, you know, like really been on one side of the fence that I think is really interesting. He's also a very practical bull guy. And he, look at this thing that's playing out right here. It's kind of defending Troy Tesla-like here. So it seems to be the bulls are at war with each other a little bit, at least on the FinTwit. Thoughts here, because we have a chart. Look at this well-defined downtrend. We've talked about it a lot on the show here of late. And when you look at this downtrend, you know, I mean, should it find support and not, like, you know, not too much lower than here, maybe above, if you want to pull this chart out and you want to look at a multi-year basis, that 150 level looks like a level here, guy. Thoughts on the Tesla chart? This looks like the mother of all head and shoulder tops to me, by the way.
We've brought this up a number of times. I mean, we've gone through it, so I'm not going to bore people to death here. But obviously, it's, you know, we had the bounce. The bounce made sense off that sell-off that we saw. The bounce didn't last. You know, we're testing the levels we saw a few weeks or so ago. I mean, it's trading a big volume day today. That downtrend channel is clearly in place. So the lower end of that probably comes in around 174-ish or so, I'm guessing. Yep. We talked about the pennant formation for months leading into it, and how we thought once it broke, and we thought it would probably break to the downside, what would happen. That's playing out. So, yeah, when you've pointed this out as well, when fundamentals seem to matter over the last 2 years or so, every time they've mattered, the stock hasn't performed. When the stock has performed, it's been on the back of whatever exuberances are in and around the market and whatever sort of the headline of the day is in terms of, you know, people getting bowled up about Tesla. But when fundamentals matter, that they have not been good to the stockholder.
Yeah. All right, Guy, I want to hit one last thing because I know we got to get out of here. Let's talk about rates here really quickly, and I want to hit the banks. Okay. So if you look at the 10-year here, you see where it is. You know, it's below that kind of 430 level. It's below that kind of sort of 200-day. It's kind of regained a little bit here. Carter detailed yesterday on the charts. He thinks rates are lower. You think higher. When we look at the CME Fed Funds tracker, I think this is kind of important here. We still see when we look out to the March meeting, there's a near certainty, at least that's what's being priced, that the Fed is not going to move to lower. If we look out to the May Fed Funds tracker here, we see that there's about a 77% chance that the Fed Funds is still at that upper bound at 5.5% or so. So the rate cuts have been pushed out to the second half of the year. At one point, they were like, I think, priced in about 6, now about 3 or so. And I just find it interesting that if we want to just look at bank stocks for a second here, that on today's, that like, look at today, what's going on here at the regional banks versus the BKX. So we see, look at the BKX. I think this chart, we drew a few lines on this. You see that uptrend that's been in place. You see where this is a 2-year chart. You see that downtrend that it broke out above. You see that level, which it broke down from last year, right before that regional banking crisis or so. And that looks like it wants to break out a little bit. And that broadening out, I think a lot of folks are saying that's really kind of bullish here, unless we're just getting to money rotating out of a sector, which is tech, that is very heavily weighted in the major indices, going into one that is not heavily weighted in, Guy.
There's a lot there. So let's just pull up the yields real quick. I mean, I think today started probably last night. I mean, China is now grasping at straws. And I actually found myself watching Bloomberg last night for a period of time, a huge sort of, you know, what looked like a congressional meeting or sort of the state of the union type speech, and talking about what they were going to attempt to do in terms of, you know, guiding for GDP and sort of working for their GDP and how they were going to stimulate the economy and stuff. But that is clear. I mean, to me, it reeked of desperation. So I think the seeds for today's action were sown last night, but it makes its way into yields because, you know, in times like these, and I don't want to see, you know, the air quotes, you know, you do see a flight to quality in the form of U.S. bonds. So I think the move lower in yields actually on the back of today's sell-off makes a little bit of sense. Again, the question comes down to, you know, what are you rooting for here? Because yields going lower today, in my opinion, it's not because anything good is happening. So the market's selling off, and yields that go higher, which I think is still going to happen, is going to be on the back of, again, auctions that are not going to go particularly well on a supply-demand type of thing. So we may have reached the point where, you know, it's, I know you're going to say it's bad either way. Well, we had a period of time where, regardless of what happened, it was good for the market. So it stands to reason you could enter a period of time where, in terms of yields, whatever happens potentially could be negative for the market.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I just wanted to flash one other chart up here, Guy. It's the KRE, which is the Regional Banking Index, versus the BKX, which is obviously more heavily weighted to large caps. Look at the bifurcation that's going on there. So the KRE still, you know, we had that NY Community Bank last week. There's still, you know, some kind of worries in that space. But if you look at the BKX, again, we just showed the chart that looks like it wants to break out a little bit. So, you know, keep an eye on that spread, especially, you know, you're going to hear a lot of talk about the 1-year anniversary of SVB and Signature and some of those other banks that went under or so. So I just think that's interesting. All right, last thing. We got to talk about the Bitcoin again. Okay. So we every morning, we send over to Timmy something that we're looking at. It's something that we promo on the Insta. And by the way, Guy and I are both on the Instagram, as is Riskversal Media. You can follow us there. Guy is guy.adami. I am Dan's Nathan, Risk at Riskversal Media. We have a little preview of what we're going to do on the market call here. But you were like 9 a.m. You were talking about the Bitcoin. You said, watch out. We got to those highs. You're one of those guys who's not a believer in making up that much ground, getting back to the prior high, and that you can meaningfully go, you know, hard above it here. Look at that. We ring the bell, make a new all-time high after such a big run in such a short period of time. And there we go. Big reversal. Thoughts there? Because again, I think you and I are in the camp that right now, Bitcoin is clearly correlated to the mania that's going on with NVIDIA. And let's see how they both act if the one corrects versus the other.
Yeah, that's why we brought it up at the top of the show, and that's why I flagged it this morning for Timmy. And again, you look at the chart and you say, okay, I mean, you see where we're trading up to, and you see potentially the potential for exhaustion. And again, when you're hearing all the dialogue and some of the, again, you know, the bullish jargon out there on the back of, you know, this price action lately, you've seen it before with other things. And that's typically, again, going back to the term that I use, when markets exhaust themselves. So, you know, I'm not an expert by any stretch of imagination in Bitcoin. I have seen different markets over the years, and, you know, I can see when things are starting to get a little ahead of themselves. And, you know, if you want to throw some technical analysis, I mean, the move we've had puts Bitcoin in that rarefied air where almost 100% of the time, vis-a-vis a couple of RSIs and stuff, things happen to fail. And what does fail mean here? Well, I don't think it's ridiculous to think we could trade back down to sort of that 52,000 level, which we sort of vacillated around for a period of time. And people are like, you're out of your friggin' mind. Well, yeah, but we've seen moves like that before. So just keep an eye on it. And I think if you want to sort of put a post-it note, you know, MicroStrategy news last night. So today's March 5th. So just go back and look what they did last night. And I think that might be sort of the, you know, I don't know, the day we look back on over the next couple of weeks and say, okay, it makes sense now why maybe Bitcoin topped out in the short term.
Yeah, the other thing is, it's interesting, Doug Cass hits us over there from realmoney.com and Seabreeze Capital. I guess Noriel Rubini was on Bloomberg this morning, noted longtime bear. Everyone seems to be running out of reasons to be negative, even well-known warrior Noriel Rubini. That's from Lisa Abramovich, who's a reporter over at CNBC, Bloomberg. So I just think that's kind of interesting. I promise you guys, they're going to have to carry us out here a little bit. I mean, listen, is, you know, we are obviously been bearish, you and I, we've tried to point out things that we have been, you know, like, you know, we can be bullish on things here and there and the like here. But again, you know, our job is, we're not managing your money. We're not your hedge fund manager, you're not your stockbroker, your investment advisor, and you may be saying, thank goodness. But, you know, I know also a lot of people who are, if they're not exposed to the major indices, you know, in a whatever this Nvidia or Supermicro or this or whatever, you know, there's very few people out there who are kind of picking those names on an absolute basis or whatever. I'll just say that. So, you know, I'm not changing my tune anytime soon. I know there's many people out there who watch Fast Money or listen to our podcast are waiting for that to happen. And they'll say, that's it. That's the top. But I'll just say, people have at it. All right, Guy, I'm passing the baton back towards you.
That's it. Tomorrow we're back on Wednesday. EY from SoFi will be joining us. We look forward to that. Thanks for sticking around. Tune into Fast Money tonight. Could actually be a pretty interesting show. As I mentioned, Gene Munster's on. A lot to talk about. So we'll see you folks later.
See you later.